Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mystery on the rocks, oh yeah. Mystery on the rocks, yeah. Mystery on the rocks, yeah.
Welcome to another episode of Mystery on the Rocks, the show where unsolved true mysteries and cocktails collide into a fantastic explosion of brilliance in your ears. That may be the second worst one.
What was the worst one?
I don't remember, but I know it was bad.
Really bad. Worse than that.
It was worse than that. That one was fine. That felt like I had a gun to my head from our corporate sponsors. And they're like, say this. I'm like, oh, all right. With me, as always, is the fantastic Suze Kempner.
Hi, I'm Suze.
And the brilliant Chris Stokes.
Representing the sponsors. Say it again, Suze. We didn't quite get it.
Oh, Christ. It's
Casper Mattresses.
It's Mystery on the Rocks. It's a show where we drink cocktails, you listen to us talk mysteries. You're welcome.
There we go.
That's the better
welcome,
one.
Welcome, America.
How were your New Year's? I guess this will go out quite late after New Year's, but we're recording it just after
This will go out
New
on
Year's.
What's the date? What's the date?
Fourth.
This will go out on the 13th of January.
Okay.
So, Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
I think you have all of January to do that, and then after January, no.
Done. No more.
Because you're not going to meet all your mates.
I'm going to keep it going. I'm going to see how many times.
Chris in April. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Yeah, to new people.
Oh, Happy New Year, mate. What?
He's waiting to see who questions it and who just goes.
The thing is, though...
Sure, yeah, hi.
I don't think anyone will question...
No, that'll be like...
They won't. They'll go, no, it's a bit...
Yeah.
Somebody might go, I met a bloke today. He said, Happy New Year. But like, that's it.
Is it that bloke today said, Happy New Year? And you know what? I think it's the guy who called me a fat gay vegan. He didn't recognise me because I've lost a lot of weight. So he thought it was... I'm pretty sure it's him.
Excuse me, are you the fat gay vegan? Happy New Year.
What are we drinking today, guys? What have we got?
I'm going to do something that I haven't tried yet. It's a toy I got for Christmas that I haven't played with. This is rum that's made from discarded banana peels.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
And it tastes, like, quite banana-y. It has Nocello in it and then some aromatic... Jerry Thomas bitters, which I think you can just use Angostura, to be honest.
Oh, yeah,
What's Jerry Thomas bitters?
But it's just a different brand, isn't it?
Okay. But with altogether, because... Nocello is walnut liqueur, and the rum has a very banana-y character. It tastes like banana bread.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
But I got given for Christmas some, like, wood chips, a little thing to put them in, and a little...
blowtorch.
For the audience who is not watching this, like, with their eyes, it looks like a grinder for weed. His little
it does.
So I'm going to pop
Chris
I'm
is about
pop
to hit.
In, and then you pop that. You pop this little thing here in the top of the glass.
Oh, and it smokes inside the glass.
Yeah, yeah. So you smoke it in the glass. So I'll do.
Holy shit, that's incredible.
So the wood chips are in there.
What is that called? You have to send me that, because that's a good culinary thing as well. That's fucking incredible.
And then I'll light these with the blowtorch, and then it's got its little lid to go on top of it, and then it'll smoke.
Oh my God.
This is so cool.
I was contemplating getting a smoking gun myself with a little...
So you can see it in the glass, look.
Holy shit, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Look
Chris
at that.
Chris is smoking that drink.
And I haven't tried this yet. This is the first time I've tried it.
That's so cool.
It's still all swirling about in there.
I can see. So cool. It's really cool.
So now I'm going to remove it.
Ah, cocktail smoker. There it is. I found it. I put glass. Oh,
is
yeah.
Good?
It smells like a fire pit.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
I like that.
But a banana fire pit.
Me likey.
A banana fire pit.
I'm going to try it now. Mmm. Oh, that is... It's toasted banana bread now.
Oh.
That's incredible. That is truly incredible. That's really good. I'm very jealous.
Wow.
I'm going to call it toasted banana bread, I think.
That's a good name.
That is a very good name.
It's an elaborate cocktail for an elaborate guy.
What are you drinking, Suze?
What am I drinking? Well, Suze Kempner was just dropping off a little before this. So my cocktail is espresso martini in a bottle. That's right. Café Patrón. For Christmas. I had a nice cocktail planned, but it'll wait till our next recording.
In my mind, that's actually called an express martini.
You're just going straight to the source. Actually, someone at the airport was ordering an espresso and it was really annoying.
Oh, no.
I found it really irritating because I don't... it annoyed me because I'm not a coffee drinker and... I know it's espresso. So
That does wind me up in the same way when people put on the fake Italian accent just for the pronunciation. Like, what we're going to do is we're going to have a couple of... Can we have two espressos? And we'll have them croissants.
I've got this weird sort of like anxiety about... Because I will never say jalapenos. Right.
Yes.
But neither will I go so far as to go jalapeno.
Jalapeno.
So it's like the middle ground. I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm. As a British person, I would just say jalapenos.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. Yeah. That's absolutely it.
You know what I mean? Don't you, by saying jalapenos?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. But if you, I would love to see. Yeah, just you, just be like, okay, so we're gonna have. Yeah, we'll have that tapas with the patatas bravas. Oh, does that come with jalapenos?
Like in Subway, where they ask, "What do you want?" red onion, lettuce, sweet corn, olive tomatoes.
Pepperami!
Jalapeno!
Pepperami!
I'm going to do it when I order a pepperami at a pub.
Do you guys have pepperami?
Do you have a pepperami? Is it a bit of an animal? And they're like, yes, madam, right away, hand me a pepperami.
Yeah, there you go.
But they throw it at you and it hits your face.
Do you want something? Just single tear rolls down into
what?
Face.
Yeah. What's your favourite Italian meat? I'd have to say pepperoni.
Suze with her charcuterie board.
Pepperoni and some laughing cow cheese.
She's left that plastic on.
Laughing cow cheese.
I've got laughing cow cheese, and what I do is I bite a corner in the triangle and squeeze out in a long thin cheese.
I feel like we've gone back in time to the 80s, and this is exactly what's happening at people's
this
houses.
This is how people used to eat, mate.
He's on a charcuterie board.
Have you seen charcuterie? And instead of artisan breads that you'd have on a modern charcuterie board, it's just some fucking, I don't know.
It's Hovis 50-50.
Mighty White. Do you remember Mighty White?
It's brown bread.
Mighty White.
Ooh.
Oh, fancy.
Oh, I've done this right now. There's actual
what
smoke
you done?
While it's open.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that. That so
looks
cool.
So good. Chris, what are you drinking?
Chris?
He did it. Sorry, I'm really tired.
I am having.
Yeah, it was you I meant.
So my one is a variation on something called a lost plane, which... Ooh. So a lost plane has dark rum, Aperol, Amaro, and lemon juice, right? Now, I don't have dark rum or Aperol, so I was like, oh, I have light rum, and I have Amaro, and I have some Campari.
Is Amaro that weird vanilla cream?
So Amaro is like...
It's the one I put in the cider and the beer the other week.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
You'll see
something
it in,
else
a,
called...
in Italian places like... a lot. And it's like, it's a pretty fun kind of complexy type cocktail ingredient that like, you can make the simplest things taste like. They have loads of ingredients in them. Sort of like how Chartreuse does that. Anyway,
I'm thinking of Amarula, sorry.
Ah, Amarula. I don't think we've ever used
that. Yeah, it's like a vanilla cream. And the picture on the bottle, I think, is an African elephant or something.
Oh, okay. So my variation is light rum, Amaro, a bit of Campari, lemon juice. Now, looking back on it, it tastes nice, but I think I'd probably back off on the Campari personally and let everything else, because it's sort of... It's quite bitter.
When you say back off, do you mean completely omit it?
Completely omit it, yes.
Okay.
I'd probably
back
do
away,
it without
slowly.
Campari. But I'm going to call this variation Flight 305, which is the plane that D.B. Cooper hijacked.
Very good.
That is, That's good.
So if you're going to make
it... We haven't done D.B. Cooper yet. Aren't we playing it?
Yeah, we have.
Haven't we done D.B. Cooper? No, he was mentioned once. We never did him. I don't think we've...
We know. Oh, he was on our episode of like people who time travel or something. Is that right?
Or it was like a...
At the studio.
We spoke about him a little bit because you and Poppy Hillstead said you both wanted to fuck him.
Yeah, from the picture.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah. I don't think we... I think then you're also confusing the tangent we went on with Syma, and we're talking about the people that survived falling out of planes.
Oh,
no,
yes,
there was
D.B.
one we did about time travel where there was a guy who flew and he said he time traveled and everyone believed it and it turned out it was some advert.
Oh, yes. And then maybe you're conflating all of these then, because the one other one was when we were doing Tommy Wiseau, there is a theory that he was D.B.
He's
Cooper.
That's right, yeah. Oh, yeah. We should.
Hello, Lisa. I heard you.
I reckon we could definitely, like, they all seem to funnel right into us doing D.B. Cooper at some point.
Yeah.
And it's a good one.
We can bring all that back in as well. It can kind of all. Anyway, Chris, what do you have for us today?
Have either of you heard of Dora Richter?
Dora Richter.
The one with the monkey called Boots.
Turned into a popular kids' TV show. I imagine we will find out why this was not a popular kids' TV show.
This mystery is barely 2 months after we left the Reichstag fire last time.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So the Reichstag fire happened at the end of February. That obviously gave Hitler a massive foothold. And the Enabling Act was passed like a month later at the end of March 1933. He became ruler by decree. He was dictator. Mm. 2 months after this, so May 1933, the Nazis are now like... properly, you can't get rid of them. They're
just love the way they're... can't get rid of them. They're fucking everywhere.
They're like a gang of annoying lads in a town who just show up at stuff and people go, oh,
yeah,
God.
So that's the problem with your drywall, mate. It's full of Nazis. That's it. You're
Shane,
not gonna get them out.
Shane and his mates are gonna turn up later. Oh, it's gonna be a nightmare.
It's gonna be fucking
it's
awful.
It's a little Nazis.
They had sort of like gone about suppressing a lot of human rights that they had no intention of ever reinstating. Obviously, they were big on censorship, so burnt a lot of books. But they also attacked a lot of medical institutions as well that were doing research that they weren't keen on.
Oh.
Dora Richter vanished, technically, but we're going to look at whether or not she was killed by the Nazis when they attacked the Institute for Sexual Research.
Ooh.
And this might relate to stuff from today.
Because Dora Richter was born Rudolf and was the first known person to undergo complete male-to-female gender.
Wow, okay. Oh, my gosh.
So where does this fall in with Lily... I can't remember her surname.
I know who you mean.
There's the character that Eddie Redmayne's playing in... film that's aged like, ooh, milk.
And in the same time as it takes milk to age as well. Like yeah. 4 or 5 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking hell. Came out, the reviews were in, and everyone went, hang on a minute, are they fucking really, Jesus Christ.
And then film critics are going to do that revisionist thing where they pretend they never wrote a good review. Empire Magazine do it all of the time.
Oh, that winds me up proper.
We always hated this.
Well, they'll get caught up with, like the hype of a film, and then they'll put 4 or 5 stars out on it.
Yeah,
and then history isn't kind to it. Sometimes they were known to do it when they a film would come out and it would be for like a glowing review. Then it would come out on home release and they'd review it again, and it would be like 2 stars because they realised people didn't like it in the meantime.
Yeah,
it's amazing. They did it with. I don't know if it was Empire magazine, but a few reviewing bodies changed their review of Titanic, which they initially gave a great review to.
Yeah.
And you go back and they'll go, yeah, it's a 3-star film. I don't know where this narrative came from that Titanic is shit, because I watched it again about 6 months ago, knowing in my head that people are like, Titanic's terrible. I watched it, I was like, it's really fucking good.
Yeah.
This film is excellent.
If you're asking about Lily...
Mm.
Lily Elba.
What was I saying? Lily Elba, yes.
Mm. Who Eddie Redmayne played in...
terrible movie, The Danish Girl.
Danish Girl. She was older than Dora by eight or nine years. But she was one of the early recipients of sexual assault surgery. She wasn't the first. Dora is the first known.
Oh, right. Okay,
interesting. Yeah. Okay. You know how Lily Elba died?
Was it complications of the surgery or what?
Yeah, so she had gender confirmation surgery, I believe, where they do you downstairs, right?
They do you downstairs.
And...
Three espressos.
A por favor. So Lily was living with, you know, the first gender confirmation surgery done, living happily. The doctor was such an egomaniac, they went, I reckon we could get a dead woman's donor ovary and womb.
Wasn't it?
Put it in Lily, and then Lily could have kids, because the real Lily Elba wanted children. Yeah. So I'd love to have children. So they were, we can make you a mother.
Right.
Transplanted these into this poor trans woman who then fucking immediately died. Days later, died from rejecting these alien organs. You can't do that.
No, it's...
So, yeah, it was a doctor being an egomaniac that meant that Lily died.
It feels very...
In the film, The Danish Girl, Lily dies very romantically, having said, I dreamt last night and they were Lily's dreams. That film is bad.
It's just like, no, you just had a fucking Dr. Frankenstein surgeon who's like, and then we could, then we'll transfer her head onto another body. I don't think you can do that. They might go mad. That's probably not a good idea. No, we should do it.
Yeah, don't do that. The way Lily died was very tragic and unnecessary.
Absolutely. Yeah, like, it could have completely been 100% avoided if the doctor wasn't like, let's put some ovaries in there.
I got an idea. I'll treat you like a science experiment, man.
Yeah, that's pretty
terrifying. Anyway. So this
is interesting that you bring this up, because it also is the opposite of what happened to Dora. So Dora was the first known person to undergo complete gender confirmation surgery, male to female.
Okay.
Interesting.
She was one of several trans people in the care of a man named Magnus Hirschfeld, who was a sex research pioneer at the Institute for Sexual Research during the 1920s and early 1930s. This is quite progressive for the time.
It is.
Obviously. This is in Germany, obviously, right?
Yeah. And
it feels progressive now because of all the crimes.
But bearing in mind, 1920s was obviously pre-Nazis. I'm not saying they weren't there, but I'm saying that they were...
They kept their heads down.
I'm saying that they were still like, don't worry about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ironically, they came to hate minorities.
Yeah. So she'd undergone surgical removal of the testicles in 1922, and it wasn't until 1931 that she had the vaginoplasty.
Mm. Yeah.
But this Institute for Sexual Research, it was a private institute in Germany that ran from 1919 to 1933. We'll find out what happened to it.
Something happened in 1933? Yeah, some kind of fire?
Anyway.
It's really strange that they'd stop just for no reason.
It was a non-profit foundation.
Whoa.
Headed up by Magnus Hirschfeld. And since 1897, he had run the Scientific Humanitarian Committee. And that campaigned, even in the late 19th century, it campaigned on progressive and rational grounds for LGBT rights and tolerance.
Oh.
It's interesting. That is crazy.
This is so sad.
I know. Like, I feel like there's a thing of the past, how the past is like, everyone thinks like it's really rigid and awful. And actually it's like, you still have these great people like this guy who is trying to push this kind
thing
out.
If you think about it, there are always going to be pioneers.
Yeah.
And there has to have been people like that then for us to feel like, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Well, I mean, go back far enough and you got Jesus, the original LGBT rights campaigner.
Great story of all time. But I know what you mean. It's like you've got to have these people, Chris, that do push that so that we could all...
There was a long-running journal published by this Scientific Humanitarian Committee. It was the Jahrbuch für sexuelle Zwischenstufen.
Oh, Zwischenstufen is my favourite.
What's Stufen? Is it just stuff?
For sexual stuff.
Sounds like sexual researcher stuff.
It roughly translates as the yearbook for intermediate sexual types.
Okay, stuff.
An annual publication by this scientific humanitarian committee headed up by Magnus Hirschfeld. And it featured articles on scientific, literary and political topics relating to sexual and gender minorities. So it was LGBT friendly.
Yes.
And because... Like this podcast.
Exactly.
Welcome. Not you. I want every listener.
I just picture, as you said that, like one person going, oh. And then just turning it off.
Yeah, they know. They're like,
whoever they are. It's me. Whomever they are, just go, no.
The Institute was opened in 1919 by Magnus. And he had a collaborator called Arthur Kronfeld. He was a psychotherapist. Mm-hmm. Now, the Institute was a library of a lot of articles, writings, essays and whatever. Mm-hmm. So it had a substantial archive which fell foul of the book burnings.
Oh no.
Eventually.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But it also had medical, psychological divisions in it. And it had about 20,000 visitors each year and it conducted around 1,800 consultations per year.
Wow.
And because it was non-profit, poorer visitors were treated for free.
Oh my God, it's a bloody utopia. No wonder the Nazis were like, ugh, I hate it.
Yeah, it's
Our
perfect.
Would do
Get
the same.
Rid of it.
Yeah.
It's
like,
a lot of open-minded scientists and politicians went to the Institute seeking information about sexuality. Mm. A lot of foreign scientists would travel overseas. They'd come to Germany to
go there. I bet. This is like the centre of modern research.
Including a foreign delegation of doctors from Russia, sponsored by the Soviet Ministry of Health. And they were
Dr. Rasputin, come this way.
And he's like, I am singing like these.
He'd been dead.
Rasputin had a
bass.
That's why he died, because he thought it was so good.
These Russian doctors, they were shown a film on sexuality, homosexuality, transsexuality. And according to the committee itself, these doctors responded positively and with surprise that the content was ever considered scandalous. Because this was an educational body, like, wasn't gratuitous, wasn't salacious. It was just treating people with respect and saying, this isn't an abnormality. This isn't like a deviation. This is just, there are lots of different people. And presenting it very matter-of-factly that if you were a scientist, a good scientist, I don't know how you'd be able to react as if it weren't.
Yeah you just go, I mean? Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
They treated the whole thing very scientifically and logically. So anybody else with that kind of brain must have just gone,
no, okay. Yeah, exactly.
It's research that they're being presented with.
Yeah.
And then the Nazis came along and were like, they're being respectful. Get them!
Hey, look at those guys. They're treating other people with respect.
Yeah. They got no respect. Treat them with respect.
If this is the leading institute in the world about this area of sexuality, and the Nazis, with their stronghold, just eradicate it, then of course it would have put the research back decades.
Oh, easily.
Yes.
To think that there would be a pocket universe in which that didn't happen is... Yeah. I mean, wow. I don't even want to... Only because it would make me so depressed that it would be such a better world.
So, you know, as well as doing all of this and studying into sex and presenting its findings and all of that, the Institute advocated for sex education, contraception, the treatment of STIs, and for women's emancipation as well.
Mm. Oh, what? They were there for women too?
So it became a point of scientific and research interest for many different scientists, but also political reformers as well in Germany and Europe. Mostly, surprise, surprise, from socialist, liberal or social democratic circles.
Oh, those guys fuck everything up.
Well,
the Nazis were the National Socialists. We've discussed this last episode. And checkmate. It's in the name.
You know what? I'm going to counter you with the fact that you don't know how to play chess. Oh, yeah? Well. Queens up. Checkmate, baby. I'm not playing with you anymore.
Hey, we're going to play chess. King is high.
So
we've all over the Kinsey scale, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He hung out with people and said whether they wanted to have a wank or not.
That's the gizzed of it.
I've seen the film. Liam Neeson and Laura Linney get off with the same bloke.
Yeah. Right.
Actually, I'm not sure. I think Kinsey was after Hirschfeld.
Although
yeah,
Kinsey's
like
for
50,
a split
60,
second,
something.
I thought Chris was going to IMDb and check out that you're like, I don't know, I don't think it was Laura Linney.
Sounds like a good movie.
To be fair to him, Kinsey would have been in his 30s at this point while this institute was around.
Oh, okay. He was older than I thought.
But
Liam Neeson was younger.
He only founded his institute in 1947, so 20 odd years after this one, almost 30.
Right.
Because let's not forget. The thing we are talking about, this institute, was founded in 1919.
Yes.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's over 100 years ago.
Yeah. Now, Hirschfeld had... We call it the Kinsey scale, but Hirschfeld posited the same thing even earlier.
God damn it. That makes me angry at beyond belief.
Yeah, so I believe Kinsey is on record as saying, yoink.
It's his catchphrase, yeah. Hirschfeld's belief was that all human beings possess both masculine and feminine traits, regardless of their biological sex. Mm. And he believed that no one was fully masculine or fully feminine, but a blend of the two. And a man could have a female sex drive, a woman could have a male sex drive. So while he was saying that no one would be fully straight, fully gay along the two, he also went one step further. And this idea that he posited about how a man having a female sex drive and a woman having a male sex drive, that led him to this idea that a man could be a woman on the inside and a biological female could be a man on the inside.
Gotcha.
And that's what led him to start looking into transsexualism is what it was called back then.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It's a really interesting path that took him down, because it seems so obvious to me that, like, no one's got every female stereotype. Like, well, obviously. No one's got every male.
I suppose, like, we are... It's a different time. I mean, like, back then. Mm. Back then, it could have been a eureka moment.
Yes, absolutely.
Of course.
Well, yeah, look at how women were expected to behave.
And not, like, not a eureka
society.
Moment for trans people. They knew.
Yeah.
Trans people have
been
around forever. They always knew.
Yes.
But for somebody who wasn't trans, like, who... In many ways, a lot of trans people would have to have lived in secret.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He, Hirschfeld, to come up with the idea independently from that, I think that's quite forward thinking.
That's pretty great. And also,
I didn't know trans people were a thing till the 90s. And this was the 1990s.
Yeah, this is it. It's
so,
like,
it's not like... Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Like 80 years after this.
Yeah.
Hirschfeld coined the term transsexualism.
Ah, interesting.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I am not cis. I am a woman.
I think this is quite cool as well. How much do you like Hirschfeld at the moment?
I mean,
I like him a lot.
I think I'm in love with him.
I think he's... Yeah, me and Masood are going to Google his image soon, obviously.
Oh, yes. You know it,
Let's
viewers.
Let's see if the curtain matches the... Let's see if the curtain matches the drapes.
We are going to get back to Dora, don't worry.
Oh,
but,
yes.
Like, at the moment, we're talking about the Institute. Now, the Institute,
yeah.
as well as treating trans people, it also employed them.
Oh, wow.
So they were able to have jobs because of the Institute.
Oh,
but
my God. Ooh,
this is really cool.
They were able to have jobs as their true selves. They didn't have to... So, like,
so
we'll
good.
Get back to it, but Dora had to still live as Rudolph.
Yeah.
For a lot of the
of
time.
Of course.
But at the Institute, Dora was employed as Dora.
Oh, my God. That's
amazing.
Great.
And what were they
great, it's a great way to skip paying taxes, too. I'm just kidding. Don't, I'm just joking. That's a total joke.
To help the running of the Institute.
So they were employed in all kinds
of
positions.
Of course, yeah.
And I mean, yeah, some of it would have been, like cleaning and stuff.
Yeah.
But
some of it would be higher.
By the same token, it would have been, like, administration as well.
Yeah.
It was via their skill set.
Absolutely.
I suppose this is, like, because it would have been hard for them to find employment.
As their true selves.
Living out and trans, if they were living authentically. This is amazing.
Yeah.
If they had something like that now, you'd go,
I mean,
wow, that's amazing.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, it's mad that there's nowhere now, really.
Yeah, if they
like
said, it's a restaurant, but it only employs trans men and women so that they can live authentically and work.
They don't have to worry about
yeah.
like coming out at work.
They don't have to worry about their job being affected by them coming out. And this is 100 years ago. They're like, yes, they all have jobs and they're paid properly.
The problem is now you'd only find out about that on a BuzzFeed list, and people would go there as like it's that restaurant where that, and it's like, dude, just fuck it. What? No, it should just be.
Yeah, they'd also have all kinds of fucking assholes going like, we're going to show up and protest.
Yeah,
women
exactly.
won't wish.
Yeah,
so how much do you like Hirschfeld at the moment?
I like him even more now.
I'd like to be buried with him.
Are we going to find out he was a Nazi? Oh, God.
So then listen to this, right?
Oh, God.
As well as employing trans people at his institute, as well as treating them and offering a lot of pioneering progressive research.
Mm.
Yeah.
Obviously, and we know that the institute also offered the first modern gender affirmation surgeries.
Mm. Yes.
Not only until the 30s, though, because obviously they couldn't. Technology wouldn't allow them.
Yes.
But they worked at being able to through the 20s. The 1920s, they worked through being able to do this. Anyway, Hirschfeld, he also worked with the Berlin Police Department. Do you want to know why?
Why?
Uh-oh. What?
To curtail the arrests of cross-dressing individuals.
Oh, my God. Because he was a learned doctor.
Yeah, so the police would see a man dressed as a woman, in inverted commas.
Yeah. That's
then,
what they saw.
And then arrest them.
Yeah.
Hirschfeld worked with the police to get them to stop doing this.
Fucking hell, man.
This sounds bad, but it's basically, I guess, that he's trying to get short-sighted, closed-minded individuals, such as the police, to see these people as people with conditions rather than deviants.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so he created this idea of like almost like a passport, which was issued on behalf of the Institute, which was recognised as a learned scientific body.
Yeah.
He would issue those to people who associated with a gender other than the one assigned to them at birth, so that the police, maybe if they stopped them, they could show them this pass by from the Institute.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So the idea of this is why it's a bit icky now.
Yes, I was about to say, like, somebody's going to tweet about
trans
this.
People should not have to carry trans passports.
Of course not.
No, my God. But it's 100 years ago. Like, this was the start. You have to start
and
somewhere.
And it does sound like he did it for a good reason, because the alternative was that they would be arrested.
Yes. Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. And that's it, isn't it? It's like, in order to kind of also speed up that process, I think that's kind of... it's not a perfect system, but it's a system that works 100 years ago.
You do this until the acceptance comes.
Absolutely,
This again, it's this idea of a prominent, eminent scientist who's spearheading it and, again, treating it logically, scientifically, compassionately, and not with prejudice. That the police have to respect that.
Was he cryogenically frozen, Chris? Is there a chance he could be thawed today and we could meet?
Maybe for like a date or something.
Yeah, just for one, just
with
one.
With two
day.
Podcasters.
I'll sit in the car.
I hear you.
Chris can be the maitre d'. Chris is there with a fake moustache, doing an accent, doing a German accent.
Are we setting up one of our houses as the restaurant?
But we've set it up like a restaurant. We've got like breeze blocks with a cushion on top of chairs. Our house is down chairs.
Because the Institute was LGBT friendly.
Mm. Yes.
It knew the society it existed in as well.
Yes.
So obviously there was a practice at the time to try and cure homosexuality.
Yeah.
Including castrating.
Oh, really? Mm. And not, I say, just in inverted commas. We've got the inverted commas out again. Mm. Not just chemically castrating.
Yeah, as in like... But actually, the physical removal of testicles apparently in Germany was abandoned by 1924. However, regardless, what Hirschfeld did at his institute was... rather, obviously, he doesn't see it as anything to be cured, so he doesn't cure them.
No.
What he does is he did this thing called adaption therapy, which was the focus was put on helping the patient learn to navigate the homophobic society that they lived in, and so that they themselves could remove their self-loathing and be open with their sexuality to themselves.
Oh my God.
So those were the therapies he put in place to deal with homosexual people that would come to the Institute.
Right.
Yeah. That's something that I'm like, I'm sure obviously they do it now, but still it feels very much like that's something that's such a forward fucking thinking thing in 1920s. Like, you've got to come term, you know, let's work on yourself and how you feel about it.
I'd say that's probably loads of therapy with people who maybe don't come from the most progressive families.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who've had to fight who they are and who they love for most of their lives. Some of them have had to have to, you know, look at gay men now. You have to, some of them have to disown their family in order to 100%, live
yeah.
as they are. It's awful.
That's, yeah.
So there's probably a lot of therapy now is just therapists going like, hey, let me tell you, it's okay to be you. You had no control over it. And also it's fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's 100 years ago. And they were like, look what we're doing.
That's fucking, oh my God, this guy.
More, meanwhile, 50% of humanity, we haven't learned a thing.
So, the Institute was opened by Hirschfeld and a guy he collaborated with called Arthur Cromfeld, who was a psychotherapist. Cromfeld was also a German Jew.
The Nazis, yeah. Yes. Not as in,
can you imagine if everyone's like, ooh.
I'm like, turn off.
Cromfeld went to Moscow.
Mm.
Okay.
And on the 10th of October 1936, an exchange between him and a fellow German Jewish psychiatrist who'd been exiled as well was recorded in the proceedings of a meeting of the Moscow Society of Neuropathology and Psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
It's believed that, unfortunately, Arthur Cromfeld committed suicide in 1941 when the German troops invaded.
Oh, my God. Shit. What, for? Do you think out of fear of being captured or just because he was like...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I mean, obviously, awful? We never lived through it, but World War II was desperate. Like,
yeah.
People living at the, like... people living at the end of their lives every day, thinking like that could be their last any
time.
This
is it.
Fucking
yeah,
man,
and
yeah.
You, and then you cut to now, you've got these fucking COVID denier idiots going, it's like Nazi Germany. And like, you think
no,
to yourself,
not.
I wasn't there, but I don't think it
I
was.
I don't think it was. I don't think it's
you remember how the Nazis said, can you please wear a mask? But you don't have to.
Yeah, yeah. Because I don't think they did.
I don't think it was. I think it was
excuse
worse
me, you have to wear a mask in this Tesco.
I don't want to, mate. Okay,
God, the storm abteilung have got really soft.
I will not comply. Oh,
that's fine. You don't,
Piers Corbyn.
You don't have
in
to.
In Nazi Germany.
If you don't want to. I mean, it's just it would be beneficial for us as our customers. But
oh, my God,
okay.
Miss Sue, that's a bang-on impression of a Nazi in the 30s.
Hello, welcome to home base.
How may we help you today?
Please, put on mask. Yeah.
Do you guys
now
have,
you
like,
wanna...
small... watering cans for like indoor plants? I'm afraid not. Oh, it's like fucking Nazi Germany.
It's like Nazi Germany. I had to wear a mask and they didn't have. Goodbye. We have no small watering cans due to Brexit. Also, I'm not here due to Brexit.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit.
So basically, the Institute was doing great work for LGBT people in the early 20th century, 1920s. Mm. Hirschfeld himself. He was targeted by the Nazis for being Jewish and gay.
He was gay!
Oh, wow. Okay.
He was beaten...
Masood. Okay.
Okay. This could work.
He was beaten by activists in 1920. Pre-Nazis, obviously, but it was called the Völkisch Movement, which is like V-O-L-K with the umlaut.
Oh, okay. They would have definitely been assimilated into that as it all...
And that was a German ethno-nationalist movement.
Yeah.
That was active from the late 19th century right through to the Nazis.
Oh, I see. Fuck so this hell. Is like baby Nazis. Did the... Is this... Because...
they were fascists.
The Volkswagen... Yeah, of course. But the Volkswagen Beetle happened during... Under Hitler, basically, didn't it?
Mm.
As in the people's car. Do you think Volkswagen comes from that as well? This idea of like, we're for the people. Because that movement was obviously seeing itself as,
we're for the people.
But that's fascist talk. Because the idea of fascism, fascism stems from stronger together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, isn't it this idea of like, you take a bundle of weedy little sticks, but you put them together and they're strong.
And they come strong, yeah.
That's the idea.
Which is why we know Hitler wasn't really a Hitler, was why we know Trump wasn't really a fascist. I know he gets described as one quite a lot.
Mm.
Trump was more isolationist. Trump wasn't interested in bandying together and taking over the world.
Yeah, he was
like,
despotic.
Let's isolate all of us from the rest of the world.
Yes.
Trump was...
despot, definitely.
Yeah, he was despotic on the right, but maybe not a fascist.
No.
I think you can classify his supporters as fascist, I think.
Because... Absolutely, yeah. He didn't have leanings to... This isn't even a compliment of Trump, but his leanings weren't, right, I want to take over the entire world. It was, I want to separate everyone who loves me and me from everybody else. Yeah. It was like an isolation.
Yeah, I just essentially want to be like
forgetting
one of those,
how big the world was.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Thinking he was a very strong
one of those Roman emperors that have people feeding grapes to him and fanning him. That's all he wants. And it's like, oh, okay, yes. It's yeah.
I want to get up, only be up for 10 hours of the day and then eat grapes.
And then eat McDonald's until I shit my pants.
Hirschfeld was Jewish. He was born in what is now Poland, actually.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, it was Prussia. But yeah. 1868, he was born. That's 1868, trans ally.
Yeah.
He got his medical degree in 1892. He studied medicine in Strasbourg, Munich, Heidelberg, where I also spent a year at university, and Berlin. After his studies, he went travelling in America for 8 months. So he saw the world.
Yes. I find that usually helps when you
see it. It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
And yes, everybody, he was gay.
Deal with it. Deal with it, snowflakes. He was gay.
Yeah.
Who was he going out with?
Yeah.
Come on. You know,
are we gonna TMZ
gossip.
This? What the fuck's going on?
This guy had a date.
Because he travelled as well, he was struck by stark similarities between the gay subcultures of Chicago and Berlin.
Oh, very similar. Okay, okay.
Right. And that's where he first developed his theory about the universality of homosexuality around the world.
Right.
So he researched in books and newspaper articles the existence of gay culture in Rio, Tangier, and Tokyo. And then through researching this, he obviously, I mean, like, he was gay himself. And he obviously then dealt with a lot of gay people recreationally and professionally. So he became interested in gay rights because a lot of gay people were killing themselves.
Yes.
Right.
Do you know what the German for suicide is?
No.
No.
Selbstmord.
Which
is one of those literal German translations. It's not necessarily self-death, it's self-murder, which is way more judgmental, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
That meant suicide linguistically made it become more of a taboo in Germany than it was anywhere else.
Oh, shit.
Because,
right.
Do you know what I mean? Just because words have power.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he highlighted a particular story as to why he was so interested in gay rights activism. Mm. We're talking about the late 1800s, everybody.
Yeah, it's nuts,
fucking
isn't
hell,
it?
Man.
He told the story of one of his patients who was a young army officer suffering from depression. Mm-hmm. He killed himself in 1896, leaving behind a suicide note that said, despite trying really hard, he could not stop desiring other men.
Wow.
And he ended his life out of guilt and shame. And in the suicide note, he wrote that he lacked the strength to tell his parents the truth, and spoke of his shame of that which nearly strangled my heart.
Now, his parents lacked the empathy to understand what he's going
but
through.
But in the whole... They might have... I never spoke to them, because...
Yeah.
In the whole note, he never once mentioned the word homosexual or homosexuality.
Oh.
He kept referring it to that, in inverted commas, in his note.
Wow.
So wow. That's so hard.
You know, but then, this is what's quite striking. This army officer, at the end of his suicide note, ended up addressing it to Hirschfeld.
Oh, shit.
And said, the thought that you could contribute a future when the German fatherland will think of us in more just terms sweetens the hour of my death.
Oh, my goodness.
I might want to rescind my comment about the parents thing. It's a very difficult, obvious fucking minefield of trying to navigate that.
Probably had a worst case scenario in his
absolutely.
Bearing in mind that Hirschfeld was writing a lot at the time. He was writing journals and articles and that yearbook, for example.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's incredible. That...
And he was really affected by the trial of Oscar Wilde.
Oh, yes.
He'd refer to that a lot in his writings.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, man.
Obviously, this will eventually lead to him founding this institution, which did a lot of good work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How much do you like Hirschfeld now?
I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's definitely contender for top three, to bone.
The two bone category.
Then there's only about three of them in there. He's definitely top
I like
three.
Him. I like him more than Basil Zaharoff.
I mean, look, Suze, let's not go saying things we can't take back. Okay?
I prefer him.
He's still alive at this point, old Zed.
My darling.
You're beautiful.
Bearing in mind, you already like him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In 1905, he joined the League for the Protection of Mothers, which was a feminist organisation. He campaigned, as well as for gay rights, for the decriminalisation of abortion. He campaigned against policies that banned female teachers and civil servants from marrying or having children. Helena Stoecker was a German feminist, pacifist, gender activist, and she successfully campaigned to keep same-sex relationships between women legal. But they were also campaigning for the legalisation of abortion. But both she and Hirschfeld believed that there was a close connection between the causes of gay rights and women's rights, because at the time both were oppressed.
Right.
You look at the shit that gay men face now, like, you go, oh yeah, most of this also applies to just women.
It's fucking nuts. That's fucking, yeah.
Hirschfeld played a prominent role in the Hardin-Uhlenberg affair, which was a really publicised sex scandal in Imperial Germany. During the libel trial in 1907, General Kuno von Moltke sued the journalist Maximilian Hardin after the latter had written an article accusing Moltke of having a gay relationship with the politically powerful Prince Philip von Eulenburg, who was the Kaiser's best friend at the time. Hirschfeld testified for Hardin.
Right.
So as an expert witness, he testified that Moltke was gay.
Yeah.
And what Hardin had written was true.
Okay. Yeah.
But Hirschfeld was also like, it is also nothing to be ashamed of, and this should not be.
Yeah, this shouldn't be.
Because he wanted to make homosexuality legal in Germany.
Yeah.
So he believed that proving that army officers like Moltke were gay, it would help the case for legalization.
Right. Yeah, of course. Right.
So while he was saying, I'm testifying for Hardin, who had outed Moltke.
Yeah. It wasn't
Moltke's gay. We need to know that there are gay people.
Yeah, exactly.
Very prominently gay people. And so he testified for Hardin against Moltke, but did say that he believed there's nothing wrong with Moltke. The direct quote from Hirschfeld is that homosexuality was part of the plan of nature and creation, just like normal love. Hmm. Don't like the word normal in there, but
look,
it's
the 1920s, come on.
So the testimony caused outrage all over Germany.
Oh shit, right, yeah, of course.
Hirschfeld makes public propaganda on the cover of Science, one article said, and it does nothing but poison our people. Real science should fight against this. There was a notable witness at the trial called Lily von Elbe.
Hey, hang on a minute. Hello. It was Lily's dreams.
So Elbe was the former wife of Moltke and testified that her husband had only made love to her twice in their entire marriage. Elba spoke with remarkable openness for the period of her sexual desires and her frustration with her husband, who was only interested in having sex with Eulenburg, the Philip Eulenburg. Elba's testimony was marked by moments of low comedy when it emerged that she had taken to attacking Moltke with a frying pan in vain attempts to make him have sex with her.
Oh my God.
This feels like an episode of The Honeymooners.
Moltke was unable to defend himself. The fact that he couldn't defend himself from his wife's attacks was taken as proof that he was deficient in masculinity.
Oh my God.
With many sources confirming his homosexuality.
Never mind that it might be this guy just doesn't want to hurt a woman because he's not a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. My God. Why don't you want to have sex with me? Because you keep...
What's your problem?
What's your problem?
But you might be thinking, that's Lily Elba, the Danish girl, but it isn't different.
No,
it's
it just so happens to be the same name.
It's the same name.
Yeah.
So yeah, bearing in mind, because of all this, he was vilified, he was attacked a lot.
Hirschfeld.
He was attacked so badly in 1920. Do you remember when I said he got beaten up by the fascist activists? He was beaten up so badly, the police declared him dead when they arrived.
Fuck me.
Oh my God.
He wasn't, obviously. No,
He was dead.
He was dead.
He was 52 at the time, 1868.
Oh my God.
Shit. My God.
When he came to, the police were like,
a zombie, kill it. Wait.
In 1921, 101 years ago, Hirschfeld organised the first Congress for Sexual Reform, which led to the formation of the World League for Sexual Reform.
Oh my God. I can't believe how much bad the Nazis did. Even more than you thought.
Yeah.
He became known as the Einstein of sex.
I like that. That's what I'm going to get. I think I'm going to get a future boyfriend to call me that.
She's the Einstein of sex.
When you talk about me to friends,
call me the
Einstein.
I'm going to cut a little bit of that
sentence
out, so it just is you saying, I'm going to get a future boyfriend.
and all our listeners like, ha, 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 ha. Yeah, okay, Suze.
He coined the term transsexual in 1923. Mm-hmm. He also made a distinction between trans and intersex.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
So he...
Something that the gender critical crew on Twitter refused to do. Yeah.
How much do you like Hirschfeld now?
I like it.
I don't think
even
there's high. There's my scale is broken. It's too high. He's incredible.
I can't think of a man that I've loved more.
So what if I told you in 1919 he made a movie?
Oh, God, this guy's done
nation's
everything.
Pride.
Oh.
He co-wrote it. He starred in it.
Oh my God!
It's called Anders als de Anderen, which translates as different from the others.
I know this film. I know this film. It's a silent film where they're all gay.
Yeah, in it, Conrad Veidt played one of the first homosexual characters ever written for cinema.
Wow.
It had a specific gay rights law reform agenda.
Yes.
Oh my
I know this film. We did it at film studies A level and a load of my classmates.
So you have seen Hirschfeld's movie. Anyway.
Whoa. Oh my God.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and it's called Not Like the Others. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was able to, because after the war, after the First World War, there was a more liberal atmosphere. It wasn't to last.
What happened?
No.
He bought property in order to put, in 1919, he bought property into which to put his institute. It opened on the 6th of July, 1919. That it was a stone's throw away from the Reichstag building.
Wow.
Oh no.
It's poetically horrendous.
I know. As soon as you said that, I was like, I got sad. I was like,
great.
You probably heard of Christopher Isherwood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goodbye to Berlin. Mm. Farewell to Berlin. Cabaret is based on his books.
He also wrote Christopher and His Kind, which I think was an autobiography. He writes about how he and W.H. Auden went to the Institute in Christopher and His Kind.
He had a book called Goodbye to All That as well, I think. But Sally Bowles is his character, and she is the main character in Cabaret, played by Eliza Minnelli.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know who originally played Sally Bowles on the West End? Dame Judi Dench.
Amazing.
Can you imagine her singing? Bad.
Is that...
Life is.
What now? As in, like, she's playing her now.
She only got one working vocal cord. So back then, she probably still sounded like, my mama thinks I'm working in a convent.
That's a good Judi Dench.
That's a very good
Judi Dench. Have you ever heard her doing Send in the Clowns?
No.
Right. people hold it up as like the pinnacle of acting, and it's Sondheim, so it's also like the pinnacle of songwriting in musical theatre. She does Send in the Clowns, and it is good, but she plays something quite angry with her Judi Dench voice, so she's like, isn't it rich? Are we a pair? And then at the end, the line is, but where are the clowns? There ought to be clowns. Don't bother, they're here.
Yeah.
And she goes, there ought to be clowns. Don't bother. They're here.
It's almost like Krusty's performance in The Simpsons. It's sort of similar.
Those funny, does it? He's like all different lyrics. Those funny, silly clowns. Singing it with Bette Midler, isn't it? Anyway, sorry about that. I had to just do my Judi Dench.
No, it's a very good dent. It was
I'm glad.
Very good. Yeah, I'm glad we.
I'm glad.
I'll do the rest of the podcast as Judi Dench.
That will sound very insensitive. We'll have it as Judi Dench as our guest for the rest of the podcast, maybe.
No, don't. I already regret it.
So, but let's go back to Dora.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dora, recap from the beginning of the podcast, the first known person to undergo complete gender affirmation surgery.
What's her surname again? I'm writing it down.
Richter. R-I-C-H.
Dora Richter.
T-E-R.
Richter. Mm-hmm. Like Andy Richter. They're related.
She was born in 1891
mm-hmm.
To a poor farming family.
Mm-hmm.
Early in childhood, she displayed a tendency to act in a feminine way. So, like, she got a bit older, start of the 1900s. She used the name Dora, began wearing women's clothing, presenting as female.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
However, she would have to work under her birth name as a waiter in order to make money. But then she would live as her true self for the rest of the year. So she'd work as a waiter under her birth name during summer, which was busy season.
Yes.
And then she'd live the rest of the year as herself. She was arrested a lot, like I said, for
because of,
man in a dress and arrest her.
Yeah.
I just can't even get past the idea of the police being like, it's like, this is a crime. Why? We don't know.
It's like, have you not got other crimes to look into?
Yeah, exactly.
Are you not busy?
Yeah.
So we have Magnus Hirschfeld at the time with his institute, sort of fairly newly opened, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
She has been arrested, served time in prison. And then this judge decided to release her into the care of Hirschfeld.
Okay.
Who gave her that passport. So that meant that the police couldn't arrest her for wearing women's clothing.
Mm.
And she worked as a domestic servant at the Institute for Sexual Research. Mm-hmm. So, which actually was, like I said, where she could be employed as herself. And she was affectionately known as Dörchen.
Oh.
Does that mean something?
No, it just means little Dora.
Oh, right, okay.
In 1922, her testicles were surgically removed. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting about this, and now that we know what we know about the Institute, not surprising, there was a psychiatrist at the Institute called Felix Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
He published her gender affirmation as a case study.
Okay.
And throughout it, obviously uses the correct pronouns all the way through.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's almost as if that's possible.
Yeah.
And not
her castration had the effect of making her body become fuller, restricting her beard growth, making visible the first signs of breast development.
So this is without artificially prescribed hormones.
Yeah.
And this was 100 years ago.
Yes.
Wow.
This is what's so interesting. So Felix did say in the case study that, it wasn't very extensive, but it did have that effect.
That's amazing. Wow. It's that easy, but it's like, there it is. There's your evidence. It's so easy.
She, in 1931, had the vaginoplasty. But it was actually, as I understand it, because it was the first one, not how they do it now, from what I understand.
Right.
Okay.
So she had a penectomy, which is obviously the removal of the penis, performed by a physician at the Institute. And then in June of that year, the same year, an artificial vagina was surgically grafted by a surgeon called Erin Gorbant.
Okay.
That makes Dora the first trans woman of whom records remain to undergo vaginoplasty.
Amazing. Wow. And like, it's hard to imagine what that must have been like, because I don't know what it's like, obviously, but there's so many accounts of modern trans women going, I woke up from my surgery and I was overwhelmed with how complete I felt. And it's quite moving testimonies. What must it have been like for Dora to be like, this wasn't a thing until they had it done. Until she had that operation, she must have woken up and been like, "Whoa!"
I mean, yeah, just be like, "Holy shit! I
fucking hell!"
Yeah, just walk. Yeah, that's fucking crazy, right? To be the first person
to be
like,
mind blowing.
Holy shit! Or maybe it's just like that kind of thing again. Like you talk about completion, it's like it felt like, oh, oh,
hey.
Like a relief, kind of like I'm
went,
who I am.
And then she went, "I have Lily's dreams."
Who's Lily? I don't know.
Just had her dreams. It's so weird though. Like I think of, I come up against all the gender critical weirdos on Twitter quite a lot. Who they call themselves that because if they actually just said we're transphobes, it would out them as prejudice. But they constantly compare trans women and usually trans women. They really ignore trans men and what they call TRAs, trans rights activists, which we'd fall under that banner, boys. They constantly call us. Like they're like the Nazis. They want us to live in a Nazi regime. You're like, Nazis literally stopped this kind of progressive work being done.
Yes.
They literally stopped it and set history back decades.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, it's the hypocrisy stares you in the face, but it, for some reason, it like blinds them because it's their own hypocrisy, which is they'll say like, "Oh, it's a real go-to of the left to call anybody that disagrees with them Nazis," and yet they'll say things like the. Liberal Stasi, or and they'll throw that back as in sort of like the left waffer and stuff.
And you want to say like, to them, have a look at what kind of books they were burning.
And not just that. It's like I don't think you get to say that the left call people that don't agree with them Nazis when that's what you are. That's the language you're using.
Yes.
Oh, I've said this before, like I'll only ever use the word Nazi if I feel like it's merited.
Completely.
And
it's not Godwin's law if you're talking about literal Nazi behavior.
It's
Godwin's law when you're going after someone who slags off Halo.
To put it back to like the trans issue and like TERFs and the gender criticals.
Yes, the gender cranks.
the idea that they think that trans rights activism is like a movement akin to the Nazis rather than, which I think is a more apt analogy than the suffragettes, then they're blind because it's not about forcing people to live as somebody they're not.
No.
It's about asking for acceptance for who people are. There's no argument in my mind.
Oh my god! I mean, like as you're saying it,
I wonder how many listeners we will lose for this episode.
I hope zero. I hope any that we lose.
How many have
make
we got
themselves
this far?
Known?
Yeah, have we got this far with people not knowing that we are trans allies?
That's just true. If somebody's like, well, "Wait a minute,"
112 episodes.
I am disgusted.
They burn our podcast onto a CD and then throw it onto a fire. Like,
ah. Yeah, they set fire to a pile of them and then say, "Nazi scum."
Those Nazis, those goddamn Nazis.
With Dora, as well as obviously being the first trans woman to undergo complete gender affirmation surgery, the first known trans woman, her fate is unknown. So it's a mystery.
I was wondering what I was like, please tell me this woman went somewhere like Denmark and lived for 60 more years.
But we do not know what happened to her, but that doesn't mean we can't make a depressing guess. She sort of vanishes after the Institute is attacked.
And it's attacked soon after the fire?
Very soon afterwards. So the Reichstag fire happened at the end of February, which again, this is recapping what we said at the start of the episode, that rushed through the Enabling Acts, or like by, like, there was a few more steps, but it was able to rush them through.
Yeah.
The Enabling Act meant that Hitler could rule as dictator, and the Enabling Act was passed barely a month after the fire. So that was the end of March that that happened, and the attack on the Institute, and also obviously a lot of the burning of the books happened at the start of the Nazis being in power.
Yeah,
this was in May.
Oh shit, 1933.
So barely, barely a few months afterwards.
So this was on the list of, like, as soon as we're properly in power, here's our list of shit we're gonna do.
Yeah, so
this is one of the things.
They burnt books by leftists and authors they considered un-German, including thousands of books that were looted in the attack on the Hirschfeld Institute.
Fucking hell.
On 30th of January 1933, Hitler is made Chancellor. And then it was 4 months after that, so in May, so not long after Hitler had taken absolute power. On the morning of the 6th of May, a group of university students who belonged to the Nazi Student League stormed the institution, shouting, "Burn Hirschfeld!"
Fuck.
They began to beat up the staff, smash up the premises, and then in the afternoon, the Sturmabteilung, the SA, came to the institute and carried out a more systematic attack by removing all of the works from the library, storing them to later burn.
Fuck.
Then in the evening, so it was a bad day for the institute, the police arrived at the institution and announced, "This is closed forever."
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
Now, it's depressing to guess, but it's also likely to have happened that Dora was a casualty of that attack. Because we don't hear from her afterwards. Now, there might be a reason for that, because maybe she escaped successfully and had to go into hiding, and that was so successful that no one knows what happened.
Yeah,
like, I want her to have died in like the 80s, in long into her 90s.
Yes, where she's like,
just her last
words.
Oh my
god, could you imagine?
Guess what? I'm Dora Richter.
Yeah, she was born in 1891.
Yeah. She is Andy Richter's grandmother.
She's younger than Hitler. She's Andy Richter's grandmother.
1891, she was born. So she could have been... She would have been 94 when you were born, Suze.
Yeah, and she could have been like... And she could have heard... Like, she felt it in her brain that I'd been born. And then she went... Oh, when a child is born.
Imagine, like, when TV started getting, like... You know, when TV would do those occasionally, like, coruscating documentaries in the 70s. And, like, her being interviewed by, like, Alan Wicker.
Oh,
or something.
Man.
Anyway, that's, like, wouldn't that be lovely to...
That would be great.
That
in my head, I want that to have happened. However, she died in 1933.
Fate is unknown. After the attack on the Institute, we don't know what happened. However, we do know what happened to Hirschfeld.
I hope he didn't burn.
My God.
So do you remember when they stormed the institution shouting, "Burn Hirschfeld, burn Hirschfeld"?
Yeah.
I'm anxious now.
When they came in to do that, he was actually on a speaking tour around the world. So he wasn't in Germany at the time. In March 1932, he'd stopped in Athens, spent several weeks in Vienna, and then in August of 1932, so the previous year, he'd kind of settled in Zurich. While he was there,
he
worked on a book which recounted his experiences and observations while he was on the world tour, and that was published in 1933. And then it was published in an English translation under the title Men and Women, The World Journey of a Sexologist. So that book exists. We could read Hirschfeld.
Oh, shit. Anyway. I thought you were going to say, and that book was translated into, "Men are from Mars and women are from Venus."
You may know the British translation.
It was called Men and Women, The World Journey of a Sexologist in the US. In England, it was actually called Women, East and West, Impressions of a Sex Expert.
It sounds like Confessions of
Women. Yeah, it does. It sounds like... what's his name?
Robin Asquith.
Yeah.
Robin Asquith. Yeah. He follows me on Twitter.
Does he?
He's really funny on Twitter.
I really like it whenever, like, if ever you do a tweet that he likes, he doesn't just like the tweet, he goes, "Ooh,
Rhymey." In those films, they used to show on Channel 5 all the time, those Confessions movies.
Yeah.
And I used to see them all the time. Here he is.
Do you know what my granddad used to call those films?
What?
Floppy breast films.
Your grand... Oh, my God.
Oh, fuck, you know.
Now, I just imagine him saying that and your grand, like, slipping and going down the hill. He says that, don't you?
Oh, different grand... Oh, yeah, no, they were different granddad. Different granddad.
In my head, they're the same. They're the same couple. He says that, and she goes... And she slides.
I thought about my grand slipping on the ice and falling down the incline again the other day. But I realised what's funnier to me now is the memory of you laughing so much at it.
It's so funny.
That is funnier to me than the memory of my grand slipping on the ice.
In my head, it's kind of like a Sooty and Sweep type thing where the camera's like right on her face and she's like, whoa! Or like a...
Robin Asquith, his Twitter bio is name dropper/trouser dropper.
Oh, hello.
That'd be better if it was name/trouser dropper.
Yeah, I'll have a word.
Some notes on your profile.
He's always like retweeting like people like Michael Sheen, really prominent left-wing people. I think he might be great. He's with his bum out all the time.
So... Hirschfeld was not in Germany when they attacked the Institute.
Hmm.
He had one eye on Germany while he was gone, obviously. And he was like, well, I'd really like to be able to go back to Berlin if the political situation improves. But unfortunately, we know it didn't. Hmm. And the Nazi regime's rise to power happened to coincide with the end of his world tour. So he decided to just not go back to Germany. He went into exile in France.
Sensible.
Yeah, good.
A couple of days... A week after the attack on the Institute, 14th of May 1933, it was his 65th birthday. He arrived in Paris, where he lived in a luxurious apartment building.
You deserve it. You deserve it, buddy.
Which by now, at this point, they've probably carved into tiny apartments.
Yeah.
I'm just mad because I stayed in France once and it was expensive.
It is pricey, isn't it, Paris?
Price, especially Airbnb. Yeah.
He had a couple of partners, Tao Li and Carl Gieser.
Carl Gieser? Carl Gieser, mate. Oh, right. Name's Carl Gieser.
Carl Gieser, he was a German archivist, museum curator, and the life partner of Magnus Hirschfeld.
Aww.
Aww.
They lived together in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What is a shame is that the following year, in 1934, Carl got involved in a dispute by, like, just next to a swimming pool.
Yeah.
There was, like, Hirschfeld has since called it, like, trifling. It was not a big deal.
Mm.
Right.
Because of this dispute, it led to French authorities expelling him.
Oh.
So
Gieser
had to be...
They were looking for an excuse,
had
really.
Had to go from France.
Oh, no. Oh, that's... Oh. That sucks.
God damn it. But then what?
His French visa was terminated. He was arrested on charges.
Jesus, visa?
He was arrested on charges of public indecency.
Now that's a travel show I would want to watch. Geezer's visas.
Let's see where this will take me.
Carl couldn't go back to Nazi Germany, obviously.
Oh shit,
so
no,
he went to Vienna, lived there for a year, and then he went up to study medicine in London.
Oh my God.
He became a real geezer. Right. He became a real geezer.
Oh my God, get around. I'm a bit of a geezer.
So from Paris, Hirschfeld, after Carl had been deported, he moved to Nice, where he lived again.
It's nice there.
In a really nice apartment building with a sea view.
Oh,
sounds nice.
While he was in France, he continued researching, writing, campaigning.
I love how Chris ignored both of those.
I know. Why has he got no time for our joy?
What did you say? You said Nice, and we both made a nice joke.
Me and Masood were making great jokes. And we were just like, mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry.
Oh.
No, don't apologise. They were
dreadful. I'm sorry, sorry. Like Nice, nice. Nah, over it.
I like them nice biscuits. A little bit French.
So he was living in an apartment in Nice, overlooking
kept,
the sea.
He kept his research, and he wanted to establish another one of his institutes.
Yeah.
So, like, he wanted to restart the institute again, but in France.
How old was he at this time, though? He would have been much older, obviously. He would have
60s. In his 60s. So he's, like, mid-60s.
Yeah.
Right.
While he was in France, he finished a book, which he'd been writing during his tour.
Mm.
And it was called Racism.
It was just called that. It was just called Racism. That's great.
Yeah, and it was published in English in 1938. He still called that? The book was to explore the racial theory which underlines the doctrine of racial war.
So what? He had things to teach the world?
Saying that he himself was numbered among the many thousands who had fallen victim to the practical realisation of this theory.
Wow. That's incredible. What? Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was all the way along. I've been expecting Chris to go, do you like him so far? And we're going, yeah.
And he'd be
and
like,
he goes, well, guess what? He agreed with the Nazis on other stuff. And it was going to be like, he hated Jews. And then when you went, he was Jewish, you go, well, it kind of hated the Jews. That would be weird.
I mean,
So this guy was basically best guy ever.
Yeah.
He exiled from his own country, but he survived. He's been in London. His partner's been in London. So what went on with this guy?
His gist was that he said in the 19th century, an ideology which divided all of humanity into biologically different races, and the terms he used were the terms they used then, like white, black, yellow, brown, red.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That served as a way of turning prejudices into a universal truth, which was apparently validated by science, even though it wasn't.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he said that this pseudo-scientific way of dividing humanity was actually the basis of Western thinking when it comes to modernity. So, like, whites were praised as civilized in contrast to other races.
Yes.
Which were, dismissed for barbarism and stuff. And then eventually that leads to a justification of white supremacy.
Mm. Right, yeah, gotcha. Huh.
So yes. He argued that the racism of the Nazi regime, it was an extreme variant of prejudices that were actually held throughout the Western world. And the differences between Nazi ideology and the racism that was practiced in other nations were different, but not in kind, just in severity.
Oh, right. Huh.
And you'll be pleased to know, obviously, that he argued against this way of thinking.
Yeah.
He said, if it were practical, we should certainly do well to eradicate the use of the word race as far as subdivisions of the human species are concerned. Mm. Or if we do use it in this way, to put it in quote marks to show it is questionable.
Yeah.
This guy.
God damn it.
A lot of Twitter could learn from him.
Yes.
I see.
Jeez. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow.
His last book was published in April 1935.
Called I Take It All Back.
Yeah. I changed my mind.
I'm a horrible man.
In the book's preface, which I will read to you, I'll read you the book's preface verbatim. Mm.
Yes.
He describes his hopes for his new life in France. So, in search of sanctuary, I have found my way to that country, the nobility of whose traditions and whose ever-present charm have already been as balm to my soul. Mm. I shall be glad and grateful if I can spend some few years of peace and repose in France and Paris, and still more grateful to being able to repay the hospitality accorded to me by making available those abundant stores of knowledge acquired throughout my career.
Oh, that's great.
Wow.
And also the brie here is really good. It's way better than that cheap shit Masood bought around the corner.
Yeah. Jordan Peterson books.
The month after that book was published, on his 67th birthday, he died of a heart attack.
Oh, my God. So it was fast. He was like, there you go. I've given you my hopes and dreams for the future. Pop, down he goes. What I would have liked is if he'd lived another 10 years and he got to see the rise and fall of Hitler, that he got to see Hitler destroyed.
Yeah. We achieved so much in that time, though.
Karl was led back for the funeral. Karl was led back into France. For,
oh, wow.
Hirschfeld's the tombstone, the engraving, reads, through science to justice.
Oh my God, what an amazing saying. Man.
And he's got quite the legacy.
Hasn't he? Just the father, basically, of modern gender theory. That's amazing.
Yeah, incredible. And so much, like, just so much, you know, there was such a huge body of work that's just so... Goddamn Nazis. Goddamn Nazis.
Yeah, do you know what? I don't like these Nazis. And I'm glad that we've heard the last about them.
I might go
series.
As far as to say, they're not good lads. They are bad lads.
Bad bunch of lads. I'm glad they never got any power.
Absolutely.
Do you think, then, that Dora was victim in the attack?
I have to say, unfortunately, for me, I think I think she, if she did escape, it wouldn't have been for very long, I don't think. You know, and everything had changed so swiftly, you know, I imagine a lot of people have been caught out with those passports and then been like, oh, cool, we can identify them through this now. Let's get them on the trains or whatever. So it's like, I think had she survived, it would have been weeks, you know, and that really sucks.
Yeah.
That really sucks.
Yeah.
Hard to get out of the country, especially if she, you know, she was on a low wage. She didn't have masses of contacts beyond the Institute. But, you know, wouldn't it be lovely? I think, unfortunately, we're looking at a DreamWorks Anastasia scenario. There's some movie made where she escapes.
Yeah, she escapes. Yeah, it's the magic.
Worked as the actress Lana Turner in Hollywood and nobody knew. But, no. Yeah.
We're making a movie for kids here. They gotta live.
You know, we'll make the villain a magical wizard called Rasputin. Unfortunately, I think she died in this attack.
I think that would, yeah.
They don't keep any records of that shit.
That's the other thing, too. It's not that they would have recorded any of the deaths of that attack either, so.
No.
Ah, man.
Awful, but what a fascinating story.
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. And, like, so fascinating to hear all of that about her as well as about, you know, Magnus.
One of the heroes of our series.
Absolutely.
And we don't have many heroes in our series.
Well, apart from ZZ.
yeah. I mean, oh my god.
Well, yeah, you know.
Zed and Magnus together. Imagine.
Oh my god. The crossover event of the century. Forget Avengers. This is the one you gotta see.
It's just like, Magnus is just like, Zahara, what are you doing? And he's like, tell you what I'm doing. I'm sleeping in a big bed with my wife.
And I'm like, that's right.
Masoud wearing,
wearing a nightdress.
Just like a set of different pink veils.
And
vaguely see-through veils
and a nightcap.
That you take off.
And definitely a nightcap.
Little nightcap. Marabou trim slippers.
Draped over a piano.
Zed, you'll find me on the piano.
Play me like you play that piano, Zed.
And he's like, I love your black and white keys. And you're like, slapping his hand away, going, nope, no. Thanks,
yes,
Chris.
Thanks
so much.
What an incredible tale that was. And so,
yeah.
Again, maddening that that sort of thing is just not really widely known at all.
Yeah, he should be so famous. I should have immediately known his name because I'm interested in this film.
He's played by Bradley Whitford in Transparent.
Oh yes. They keep going back in time to the 20s in 20s Berlin because that's where the family came from.
I fucking love Bradley Whitford.
I didn't realise that was the character.
Oh. I've never watched it. I mean, like, it wasn't long after it came out, the Jeffrey Tambor thing.
Unfortunately, yeah. I was watching it before that.
Yeah.
And then the show had to end quite abruptly.
Mm. And thank you for listening, everyone.
Yeah.
And also, it was a Mystery on the Rocks way of doing the book burnings, I guess.
Yes.
Like, talking about the Nazis taking hold, we can't just do an episode which is Nazis burnt some books.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? It's like,
that's it.
Because
the stories, the stories are the people it affected.
Absolutely,
it,
so. Yeah. Because that would be a very short episode, wouldn't it? Just, Nazis burnt books, bye.
They've done that.
Yeah.
Mystery solved. Yeah, if you are someone who is a bit like, all the gender critical stuff seems like yelling from both sides. Maybe if both sides started listening to each other, then they wouldn't accuse them of being Nazis. Think about that. Go and look at what kind of books the Nazis were burning. We kind of tell you about it in this podcast.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just, I don't know.
Then tell me it's both sides yelling at each other, you fucking dicks.
I like that slight hint of, I don't know what accent was in that, but it was quite fun.
You dickheads.
Then tell me, dickheads. Yes, you know where to find us. We're at Mystery on the Rocks, spelled ROX, on Twitter. You can also find us on Patreon, patreon.com/mysteryontherocks. Get yourself lined up on them tiers. You can get some pretty sweet stuff. Also, it helps make sure that this bar/podcast keeps going. So do, you know, if you're around, you're like, hey, I think I could throw a couple of coins their way. I'm enjoying this. Get on there.
We haven't said bye yet.
Oh yeah. Oh,
oh
yeah.
Sorry.
bye.
See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
We're being egg wizards.
Oh yeah.
Mystery on the rocks. Oh yeah. Mystery.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.